This is the Dan Grosse Show on 98.7 ESPN.
There's a lot of current Jets, of course, here when we have the green and white scrimmage, but there's also a lot of former Jets who are going to be gracing us here along the way tonight, and one of them has just joined me, sit next to me, and you talk about winning a lot of games. This is a guy who knows about winning a lot of games. He did so in college at Ohio State, did so when he wore the green and white as a member of the Jets, helping them get to that AFC Championship game in 2010, and oh, by the way, he also just happens to be a former Super Bowl MVP. There aren't many of them, but how about a big round of applause for everybody here for former Jet wideout Santonio Holmes.
Thank you.
Santonio, Dan Grosse, good to meet you, my
Dan,
friend.
Thank you for having me on, baby.
So what have you been doing since you walked away from the green and white and hung up the cleats? What have you been up to?
Oh, man, just enjoying life, man. I've actually been golfing.
Golfing?
Yeah.
How's your golf game?
It's fun.
Fun. Good? Just fun.
I actually just learned how to play golf, so I'm actually doing pretty good, you know, breaking under 100.
Right.
Keeping in the 90s.
Not bad.
I had my first 83 recently, so I felt really good about that.
Very nice.
You know, so it's just like practice, going to practice every day, and the more practice you put in, the better the results will come out in the end.
When you retired and you got away from football, because a lot of guys say, you know, professional athletes, when they're done playing professionally, they need to kind of shut off the switch a little bit, get away, kind of just clear your head. Did you do that? Did you kind of stay away from football, even watching it on TV?
Actually, I didn't. I trained for about 2 years, you know, still having that excitement inside of me and that determination that I wanted to push and get back into the NFL. But due to that severe injury that I took in 2012,
right,
it really hindered, you know, my progress moving forward and limited my ability to get back to that level of playing competition that I had, you know, when I first joined the Jets. And being limited at that point, you know, it really takes a toll on your mental. And having those years, you know, stripped away from me moving forward, I just really wasn't as excited to get back into the game. So after that, those 2 years of training and done in 2015, you know, I decided to hang up the cleats.
Talking with former Jets wideouts Santonio Holmes here, and you mentioned 2012, that foot injury that you suffered there. I mean, it was an unfortunate kind of end to your career, that game against the 49ers. You catch a pass, and then all of a sudden, boom, you go down. Ball goes up in the air, and the Niners are taking it back to the house. But when you look back at it, though, I mean, that's still got to eat away at you a little bit, just how unfortunate it was that your Jet career came to an end like that. Had a lot of good moments, though, before.
It's a part of football,
right?
You know, that we all have to go through. And it's very unfortunate that it happened at the peak of my career, you know, in year seven, that I suffered this heroic injury, you know, by putting in all these efforts and to be, you know, one of the best Jet wide receivers and to help our program, you know, our organization, excuse me, get to that pinnacle. And to know that season went down the drain, you know, for me. Four games into the season, and I wasn't able to contribute, you know, like I wanted to for the New York Jets.
It was like a snowball effect after that, too, in 2012. But you were part your first year with the team, though, in 2010, helping them get back to that AFC Championship game, and you had a tremendous amount of impact plays that year. I mean, my goodness, the game against Cleveland, the game against the Detroit Lions, I mean, the game against the Houston Texans, I remember, late in regulation, you caught that pass down the sidelines for Mark Sanchez as he's taking his little selfie here. But when you look back at that year, though, in 2010, I mean, you were just close, one step away from that big game. What do you remember fondly about that year?
Oh, man, we had a great team. When I say we had guys that were so eager to play for each other, our defense was so stacked. You know, our offensive line was great.
Mm.
We protected Mark, myself, Braylon Edwards, Jericho Cotchery, Dustin Keller, Sean Green, LaDainian Tomlinson, and all the other pieces. You know, excuse me for forgetting you guys. But when I say we all contribute to that team, and we contribute to the success that was transpiring, you know, during that time, that we all wanted that to happen for the New York Jets, is to get them to the Super Bowl. And it was just unfortunate, you know, that the Steelers had more firepower, you know, to stop us at that time and get into the championship game. And you know, it's unfortunate that the Jets have not got back to that level of competition, but in a sense, in the direction that they're going now, you know, they're finding all the right pieces to put them all in the right places, and that's allowing this organization to move forward.
And I intentionally left out maybe your best moment as a Jet, and I'm sure a lot of people remember the week before that championship game, divisional playoff game up in Foxborough against the Patriots. You had a touchdown pass, a beautiful fade in the corner of the end zone from Sanchez. Was that the sweetest moment in your Jet career, going up to Foxborough and avenging that bad loss you had on the Monday night, remember, 45-3 early in December, but going up there and beating a team which everybody thought was not going to lose that year, and you go up there and get revenge?
I can remember Coach Ryan just telling us before the game that no matter what happened, that if we put in our best effort, that we will come out victorious. And I could, you know, see Tom in the backfield, you know, woofing for like ghosts were coming by him, that our defense was getting to him, you know, at that moment.
You picked him off on the opening drive, David Harris.
And we were ready to play against the Patriots at that time. That pass that Sanchez threw in the end zone.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know how I came down in the back of the end zone, but the pass was even great, that he threw it to where only I could catch it, and I knew exactly where I needed to be. But to keep the focus in getting my one knee down and the foot down in bounds really helped us, you know, get to that next level. And those big plays that Braylon made up the sideline, Jericho made, you know, down the middle of the field to put us in great position to keep our drives moving. The running of Sean Green and LT, you know, coming off the side, and Brad Smith, you know, helping us in our special team. We had a very, very good group of receivers that were willing to sacrifice as much as we could for the good, great of our team.
You know, I think you talk to a lot of Jet fans, and unfortunately, I think you look at that 2010 championship game against the Steelers, because that was the second consecutive one. They were there the year before. You weren't on the team, though. But I think they look at that second one in Pittsburgh as maybe more of a missed opportunity than even the first one, because you guys had the big win in New England, and you thought, all right, we learned, we know what it takes to play in the championship game. You go back a second year and just didn't get off to the start you wanted to. Did you guys, were you maybe a little too amped up after that Patriot game going into Pittsburgh, you think?
No, I wouldn't say we were too amped up. We were ready to play the football game because we knew what was at stake. And if we brought our best team to that game, to that fight, that we could win. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, they played a great game. Their defense shut us down when it mattered. They stopped the run. And I think that kind of took the fight power out of us when we couldn't get Sean Green and LT going, you know, at that particular time. And their defense stood tall in the fourth quarter, and that was the difference in the game.
You know, unfortunately, you know, you look at the way things have transpired for you here and there, and, you know, this team, what they can do. And as you said, it's been some lean years since you stepped away from the franchise, but there's a lot of optimism again. Sam Darnold, of course, the rookie quarterback, a lot of fans excited by that. When you look at this Jets team, do you think that they're now on the verge with some of the other pieces that they've surrounded them with of turning the corner and getting back to playoff football?
When you start off a season, you have to be worried about all the components that are gonna gonna factor into your team winning the ball game. And that's starting with the quarterback situation. And that's trusting the quarterback and allowing him to make these mistakes during training camp and during this time so that he's ready and prepared for the season. The receivers, they have to be trustworthy. They have to be in the right place at the right time. They have to make the extra blocks down the field when they don't want to. They have to run the decoy routes when they don't want to create opportunities for other guys to get open. You can't be selfish, you know, as a wide receiver. And I'm going to retract on saying that you can be selfish.
Yeah.
But in a sense, when you're helping out the team, sometimes you just have to do those things that are going to be good for the team. And when you get all your offensive linemen in the right place and they're playing and they're protecting and they're running the ball the way they're supposed to, and they're winning and excitement with this young crowd of fans that is willing to come and still support the New York Jets, I think the young guys today on the team really need to bring that excitement to the fans so that the fans can now feed off of that. And that is the excitement that they're going to need all season long, is to continue to feed off the fan support.
Santonio, it's great seeing you, man. It really is. Part of the
Thank
Legends
you.
Community. Want to see more of you during the season, of course.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
There's only been 52 Super Bowl MVPs in NFL history. This gentleman is one of them. The wrong uniform, unfortunately. Wrong uniform, but he's Santonio Holmes. Santonio, thanks for stopping by. Right. We really appreciate it. Big
thanks
hand for Santonio, everybody.
Let's go Jets, baby.
That's
like a Jet, baby. You know how we do. All right, thank you, guys.
Good seeing Santonio Holmes. And, I mean, those were some good teams, especially 2010, of course, that he was a part of. And they just came one step close to the ultimate goal, or one step short, I should say, the ultimate goal in getting to the Super Bowl. So we're going to say goodbye to Santonio, and we're going to bring in another former member of the New York Jets. And we know this guy. He's part of this business now, and he's made a seamless transition. Anthony Becht.
How we doing, partner?
Former Jet tight end, former Jet first-round pick. Big round for Anthony Becht.
Yo, what's up, guys? How we doing?
Good to see you, my friend.
What a crowd, huh? This is good stuff.
Now, Anthony, unfortunately, I got a bone to pick with him.
What
because
do you got?
This is my old stomping grounds
right.
of Rutgers. You, being Mr. West Virginia, of
never
course, a former
team.
Rival when you guys were in the Big East together. You're right, you never lost to this
never
team.
Never lost to some of my best games.
Some of your best games, unfortunately, that I got to say that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure this brings back good memories playing games here.
Yeah, it does. I mean, obviously, they've dumped a little bit of more money than
a
they did when
money.
I used to be here. But beautiful facility. It's good to see the fan base today. And it's just fun. This is what it's all about. The season starts. This is kind of the kickoff for all the fans to get geared in. And I'm looking forward to seeing what we got going on here in the scrimmage today.
When you as a player got to this point, still very early on in training camp, only a week started, where was your mindset? Like, were you already at the point where you just couldn't wait to hit somebody not wearing the same uniform as you?
Well, for me coming in, I just wanted to make sure, the house cleaning things were kept in check. Understanding my playbook, I dialed into that. I knew that was the most important thing. When you're a first-round pick, you got to be ready to go now. And that was kind of the pressures that, the GM, Bill Parcells at the time, put on me and my coach, Ken Wisenhunt, who was the tight end coach at the time. I mean, these guys, would pull me aside and say, listen, we're not waiting for you. You better catch up now. So that was the biggest thing. And to go out here, really didn't matter who I was going against. It was the same guy, different guy preseason. I was just trying to, soak in as much knowledge as possible. And I was able to do it in events like this, scrimmages that we had at Hofstra at the time, and then ultimately into the preseason. So in the beginning, man, I was just trying to just get myself acclimated to the speed because that was the biggest adjustment for me as a player out of college.
And when you look back at your career, of course, you came in as a first-round pick in 2000, and you guys had a great draft class that year in 2000. I mean, the four first-round picks, which you don't see very much of anymore, was you and Sean Ellis and John Abraham, Chad Pennington. You also had Lavernius Coles later on in that draft. I mean, that was one hell of a draft class. And you guys won a lot of games, of course, as a group. But, when you look back at your time in this uniform, you made the playoffs on a couple of occasions, had a couple of runs there, where, unfortunately, the Raiders were your roadblock on
Raiders
a couple of
Steelers,
occasions.
Right?
The Raiders and the Steelers. And, you think back to that game in Pittsburgh in 2004. Does that one still eat at you today?
It does. Lavernius and Wayne were just talking about it on the ride over. It was a season where, there was always that one hot team that comes into the playoffs. We felt like we were that team that year. We went into Pittsburgh. And, if you ask any of the Steelers' defense when we were lining up for those field goals, you would ask them who won that game. They say, man, you got us today.
Yeah.
And then ultimately we weren't able to make them kicks. But, it was a tragic day for the fans. I know that. But it was definitely something that sunk in my heart for a long time. Still does.
But you know what the funny thing about that is the week before, and I mean, if you're a fan, you're sitting there chewing, at least I did, chewing my fingernails off. I mean, you got the job done in San Diego, but that one was one that had to go into overtime. And you talk about the kicking game. Wait, their guy, Kading, missed the field goals.
Unbelievable.
And you guys had a new lease on life there and were able to win the game.
Exactly. Yeah, well, and then we had the late hit on the quarterback, which didn't help when we hit Breeze
Eric
late.
Eric Barton.
Yeah, Eric Barton.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't want to drop names.
It
was what it was.
Yeah.
But, that was going on the road, winning that football game. We just felt like, having to go on the road twice back-to-back weeks, doing what we did, we just felt like we were in good shape. But, that's how it falls. I mean, again, Pittsburgh was a great team that year. I think ultimately they ended up losing to the Patriots.
Patriots the next week.
It did. So, we felt like, that was our best chance because we felt like we had their number. We were ready for the Pats that week, but just didn't work out.
Talking with former Jet tight end Anthony Becht here on 98.7 ESPN. We're live at the Jets Green and White scrimmage at Rutgers University. For me, thinking back, and I'm sure that you probably feel this way, 2002 was one of the most unpredictable but ultimately fun rides, I think, that the Jets took their fans on. I mean, remember the year started, all this optimism. Of course, you had the crazy win in overtime up in Buffalo on the Chad Morton kickoff return when it was sudden death, remember, still in overtime there. Then you guys lose a few games. Herm decides to go to the bench. Fans were calling for Pennington. Chad comes in, sets the world on fire, and you guys win the AFC East that year with a 9-7 record. I don't know if you've heard these stories, but I'll give you a different perspective.
You got a great memory, by the way. I got to give you.
Let me give you the perspective of the fan, okay? If you remember that last game of the season, you guys needed help.
We did.
Okay? You needed.
I remember watching the Jumbotron that game.
Pats and Dolphins up in Foxborough, 1 o'clock game.
Yep.
When you went into the stadium, because you guys were playing the Packers at 4 o'clock.
Packers,
when you went into the stadium at about 3:30, Dolphins were in control of that game.
I know.
And then it seemed like hope was lost completely. So you get up to the stands, and we're sitting there, and you're watching, and you're starting to hear rumors. Because remember, this is before Twitter, before smartphones, social media, all that stuff. And everybody's got maybe the little TVs or the transistors. You hear the Patriots coming back, the Patriots coming back. Your game starts at 4 o'clock, and nobody was even watching what was going on the field.
I wasn't.
All we're worried about, right, I mean, is what's happening with New England. Then New England ultimately wins the game, and then it's if you win, you're division champion, then you guys just steamrolled the Packers and Favre that day. What do you remember about that day?
It was electric. I mean, the game was on the jumbo screen. Everybody was watching, like you said. You know, as soon as the end of the game happened, it was just an electric roar from the crowd, and that just fired us up at players, man. We just had that second wind as a football team, and not only did we, you know, wipe up the Packers, but then we took the Colts and Peyton Manning, his worst playoff loss of his career. I mean, it was just it was an unbelievable season, and that was that transition again. You know, Herm in his second season, you know, kind of trying to build around what he's trying to build. You know, we had different coordinator with Hackett and different things of that nature. So was able to kind of put it all together, and again, we were able to build some things. And ultimately, you know, when 2004 season came, you know, we felt like that was the team where we could set the bar and get it done. And of course, after that, we kind of broke it up a little bit, and some guys went their own way. But that's what the NFL is all about. It's about building something. It's about, you know, cycles for a lot of teams. And I think, you know, this is how, as Jet fans and myself looking on the outside in, this is where we're starting to see a little bit. Can we get more chemistry? Can we get the team built up? A lot of, you know, awesome faces that are, you know, through the draft and through free agency. And hopefully, you know, this team can continue that trend of moving forward and, you know, winning some more games this season.
What about your old coach in Herm? Now he's back on the sidelines, back in the college game at Arizona State. How do you think he's going to do?
Man, I don't know. You know, he's been out of the NFL.
Tough conference, too, Pac-12.
It is a tough conference. You know, I don't know. Herm's been out of the game for 10 years now. And as you look at, you know, what he's trying to accomplish going back, not just to football, but the college game, you know, he's old school.
Yep.
So, you know, those kids are going to have to buy into something that's a little different. You know, of course, compliance and all the things he's going to have to follow, get into those rules. But looks like things are good. I know Kevin Mawai is on his staff.
Yep.
So he's out there. He's pretty excited about what's going on. But it is a tough conference. There's no question about it. But they definitely have some athletes there. I can't wait. I called the Arizona State-USC game last year. So, you know, maybe I'll get back to the Pac-12 and see what he's got cooking this year for the team.
So you saw up close and personal USC, of course. Sam Darnold, who everybody thinks has a bright future, of course, and is going to eventually take over the reins of this football team. When you see this quarterback right now in terms of how polished he is making that transition college to the NFL, where do you think, if any, you'd like to see some more seasoning?
Well, you know, Sam just got to get some of those reps against the speed of the NFL. I mean, you're going to get it in practice. You'll get some tonight. The preseason is going to be another level of speed, but there's still that next level in the football games. You know, the one thing about you love about Sam, and, you know, I studied him, watched all his games last year, just came out thinking he was the best quarterback of the crowd at his demeanor, his ability to go in there, and he made some mistakes in college. There's no question about some poor throws, but he'll come right back and slice one down the middle of the field and make a huge play for you. So short-term memory for quarterbacks, you got to have it, and that's going to be instrumental for his growth, especially in the NFL. When he gets those reps, he needs to take advantage of that. Now, where will he be through the preseason? Is he going to be ready to potentially be a week one starter? We'll watch that growth go, and we'll know. You'll know as a fan watching him on the field. You say, you know what? This kid's got it. He's ready to go. He can handle it. He's obviously soaking it all in. He wants to be a part of it. He's going to compete to be the starter. And I think it's not going to be big enough for him if he is the guy. But if it takes time, it takes time. I think we're very fortunate to have a Josh McCown who proved that he can kind of step back and do, you know, if you just do the right thing on the field, you can put this team in a chance to win week in and week out. And of course, with Teddy, you know, covered a lot of Teddy in college at Louisville, really excited me as a player, came into the league. All of a sudden, he's starting his rookie year. And if it wasn't for a tragic accident, who knows? You know, so he's a guy that adds in. So you get that competition factor, not only on the field, but in the meeting of the minds inside the building as well, which is going to help his growth.
And that's one of the things, too, if you're a Jet fan, it's night and day between the situation that it was in that quarterback room a year ago versus what you have right now. I mean, you just outlined it. I mean, think about, if not Darnold, you have the veteran Bridgewater, who was a former first-round pick, played in a playoff game, and McCown, who is the consummate veteran, who has seen it all. You feel comfortable with him. That alone has got to give you some hope going into this season.
Well, think about this. I mean, there's a lot of backup quarterbacks across the league that have a lot of experience. A lot of these guys want to play, right? They don't want to be the teacher. Well, he's embraced that role. You know, he's going to go out there and going to try to win the job as a starter, but he's still trying to build up Sam, and he understands and knows what we're trying to accomplish with this young man. And that's a great chemistry to have within a team, within an organization. So, you know, that, number one, that's at the additional quarterback coach that you have along with your coordinator. And, of course, he was a quarterback coach last year in Jeremy Bates. So all those things meshed together will help speed the process up for Sam Darnold.
By the way, in 2000, Monday night against the Dolphins, I didn't leave.
Pretty solid game.
I
didn't stick around?
I didn't leave.
You know, because you were working, or you were there because you got to stick around?
Are you kidding me? I was still in school then. That was a long time ago.
Well, you might have been doing
that. Was 18 years ago.
You were doing podcasts before podcasts, you know, putting something on.
I wasn't that advanced. No thanks.
A little tape recorder.
Anthony Beck, former Jet tight end, and Anthony's going to be with us this year for some of our broadcasts at home, pre-games and stuff like that. So we look forward to having Anthony with us all season long. See him all year on ESPN doing college football and whatnot. He's all over the place, and he's a Jet. We're glad to have him. Anthony, thanks for stopping by.
Can't wait to be a part of it this season. No doubt.
See you soon, brother.
This is the Dan Grosse Show on 98.7 ESPN.
We've already talked to a couple of former Jet greats, Antonio Holmes and Anthony Beck. Then another former Jet wideout is sitting to my right right now, and he needs no introduction, but the great Lavernius Coles joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. LC, how you been?
Good, man. Taking it easy.
Good to see you. And what have you been doing since you hung up the spikes?
Enjoying retirement.
Enjoying retirement.
That's it.
How's the body feel after all those years in the NFL?
Beat up. I mean, it's just like anybody else. I mean, taking a lot of tough hits going across the middle. Back in the day, you got a few nagging injuries that bother you in the morning, but after you get those kinks out, when you wake up, it's fine.
And, you know, LC, of course, had two tours of duty with the Jets. You know, broke in as a third-round pick, right, in 2000. And I was just talking with Anthony Becht. He was one of the four first-round picks that year. But he can't forget you because you had, you know, as good a career as any of them, and you were a third-round pick. You came into the NFL, though, and, you know, there was some stuff that went on, of course, you know, out of your control at Florida State. But you came in with a chip on your shoulder, and you played with that, right?
Of course. I mean, I carried it on the field with me. I mean, I just came in and worked hard every day. Fortunately, I had the opportunity to work with Jet great Vinny Testaverde, but I had Chad Pennington in my ear the entire time when I first started. So having those guys and then having Wayne mentor me coming in as a young pup really made things a lot easier with the transition coming from college and then having a chip on my shoulder. So they kept me out of trouble and kept me on the right path so that I could play on Sundays.
You know, I was thinking back, too. I think you guys as an offense, you know, when you were here, really I think you clicked the most in that 2002 season when Chad took over. And you, Wayne, Santana Moss, you guys as a trio, right? Am I right? As a wide receiver trio, you guys really did some damage out there. And the unfortunate thing is because then you ended up going to Washington, you guys didn't stay together as a trio long enough, I felt. And that would have been fun to see.
I hear about it all the time, how talented we were with me and Santana on the outside and Wayne patrolling the middle. There really wasn't much you could do with us. And Curtis Martin coming out the backfield. So our offense was very potent at the time. It was kind of pick your poison. And I think if we'd have played together the following year, I really think we would have had an opportunity at a trophy.
But the business side intervenes, of course, and that's football. It's a business. We get all that stuff. We know that. But, you know, when you think back at your time as a Jet, and as I said, you had two tours of duty. You came back again, and you were very productive as well. You played for a couple coaches, of course. You started out with Harm, and then you played for Eric Mangini there. Pretty big contrast, at least in terms of personality, right, between those two coaches, though. But when you look back at your time with the team overall, there's probably some good you take from both sides, right?
Of course. I mean, I started out with Al Groh. A lot of people
Al Groh, that's right. Forgot.
Yeah, so you had Al Groh, and I mean,
he was in and out after 1 year.
Yeah, that was a tough time. But coming in with Herm, Herm treated us like men, which you can only appreciate, and he allowed you to come in and prove yourself, and he gave everybody an equal opportunity to get a chance to play on the field, which opened the door for me to have a chance to play because we did have some good receivers at the time ahead of me. We actually drafted a guy named Wendrell Hayes in my same draft class.
Yep.
That was really ran great routes, and he had some hamstring issues and stuff like that, and I felt like once I got an opportunity to get on the field, they weren't going to be able to take me off. So, again, once I got on the field, Santana was drafted the following year. Then you had Wayne already in the mix. I mean, it just made for a great mix for our team.
Was there one moment, was there one game, was there one that moment that you can look back to during your time with the Jets that stands out apart from all the others?
I would have to say that playoff game when we played Indianapolis.
Wayne Corbett steps by. 2002.
When
you guys won the division.
I mean, they introduced the wide receivers as a group, and I just remember us coming out of the tunnel, and I mean, the world was ours at that time.
I was just talking about it with Anthony Beck. Do you guys remember that last week of the season in 2002, that Green Bay game where you needed the outside help, you needed the Dolphins to lose, so you guys could then beat the Packers and win the division. Do you remember what that environment was like in the stadium once that Patriot game went final and everybody knew, all right, now it's win and you're the division champs? Do you remember what that felt like?
It was electric in the building. I mean, the fans was cheering, and from there, I think we put our foot on the gas and ended up steamrolling Green Bay at that game.
Oh, and then he carried it over next week to the Colts.
Yes, they came in and took a beating also.
Chad with a screen pass to Richie Anderson, and I think he's still running. They still haven't catched him, and that started off everything.
Yes.
You know, you played a position which, I mean, even from the short time or from the time when you were playing to now where we are in 2018, it's changed in the extent that, you know, with these wide receivers now, there's no fear if you run over the middle. There's no fear really about anything because you're not allowed to lay a hand on him. You know, when you look back and you say, do you ever, like, watch football now and say to yourself, geez, boy, I would really love to be going out running routes now?
Well, I mean, I think that's what made football great. I mean, we all do it for different reasons, and I think that, you know, it's a gladiator sport. And I mean, the way we played the game, we had a tough mentality. We wanted to go out and take the big shot and get up. And still hold on to the football. And I mean, that's what it was about for us. And I think they're evolving the game to make sure they protect the guys with, you know, and that's a business side of it that they're trying to do. But I think people paid their money back in the day to watch the big hits and see guys go out and make the tough catches going over the middle. But again, I mean, the game is still great. The game is still fun. And hey, let shit fall with it, man.
We're live here at the Jets Green and White scrimmage at Rutgers University on 98.7 ESPN. Lavernius Cole's joining us, and we finally got a headset on his former wide receiver teammate there, the great Wayne Krubet, joining us. Big hand for Wayne, Jersey guy. Wayne, good to see you. How are you?
I'm great. You?
Doing great. Doing great. And I was just talking about Lavernius. You know, it really is, when you look back at those times in the early 2000s, it's just unfortunate that the two of you guys throw in Santana Moss. You couldn't stay together a bit longer because you guys were really clicking, especially in 2002.
Yeah, we fed off each other. You know, somebody made a play, the other two try to top it. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand the routes we run that you don't see is what gets everybody open. And we were on the same page, and that was some of the best years of my career.
You know, and if you watch pro football now, and certainly over the last several years, there have been a lot of guys who have made names for themselves who were either undrafted or came from small schools or whatnot, but go back to 1995 and this guy right here, because he was one of the first to do it. This is a guy who was undrafted out of Hofstra, of course, local guy from New Jersey, enters training camp. What number were you on the wide receiver depth chart?
12 or 13.
12 or 13. I don't even know if they had 12 or 13 guys, but he was at the bottom. And then opening day in Miami that year, he's running out of the tunnel as a starter. An incredible story, and you crafted yourself one hell of a career.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know what it is? When I got there, you know, I was last in line. It was the veteran free agents and the draft picks, and then I just stuck in the back line. But this guy got hurt. This guy was dropping passes. This guy was out of shape and kind of dwindled down, and I worked my way up.
And it always seemed like, too, they always were trying to bring in, at least for a couple of years, they bring in guys to, you know, kind of fill that position, maybe more accomplished. You know, they drafted Keyshawn first overall. You guys stay in touch, by the way, with postcards, Christmas cards, all the time? Let me get to a game that year, by the way, in 2000. Tampa Bay, of course, halfback option pass, Curtis Martin to you in the end zone.
Right.
Game-winning touchdown. I'm sure people remember that game. There was a lot of talk going into that one. The war of words, the back and forth. Keyshawn, who was traded away against you guys. And you guys go down there, you win that game. You get the game-winning touchdown. What was that one like?
It was nice. One of my favorite games. It's poetic justice. I didn't say a word.
I just played,
and then after the game, I had my nicest suit on and just smiled, and everybody knew what happened. But talk about bringing guys into camp. They brought Lavernius in, and Lavernius didn't think much of me when he first saw me.
Really? Go ahead.
So I get the cap, and you know, I don't know what number I am on the depth chart, but I look at Wayne and I'm like, man, that's Wayne Krubet. I call home and tell my mom, I'll be starting in a week.
And then we put the pads on.
Then you put the pads on.
Yeah.
And he had already had a really, really good career from that point. He was in the league for what, 4 or 5 years when you showed up?
I think 6 or 7.
Yeah. And then I'm not that old.
Well, he was there a few years before you, and you know, you talk about, I was talking about it with Santonio Holmes. He of course got to a championship game there in 2010 with the Jets. You know, 98, win the division with Parcells. You win 12 games that year. You talk about ones that got away when you look back. I mean, if you think back, up 10-0 third quarter after that block punt in Denver, when you're up 10-0 in the third, you thinking in the back of your mind we're going to the Super Bowl?
Yeah. I mean, we had a great team that year.
Great team.
And then the ball just bounced funny in the second half and got John Elway on the other side.
Elway didn't play a great game that day.
Yeah, but it's just crazy to be that close. And then 99, we think we're going to go right back.
Oh.
I broke my foot the last preseason game. Vinny tore his Achilles the first game of the year. I mean, me and Vinny are like with ice on our legs watching the games every week. We're like, how did we get here?
I remember there was this one shot, of course, on that day, as Vinny's getting carted off into the tunnel, yeah. And then you're standing off to the side on crutches.
Yeah.
And I remember that image back then, and I'm thinking, Super Bowl aspirations, yeah. And now we're two of our big guys,
yeah,
on crutches down for the count. That one's up. But you know what, though? The team rallied that year, if you remember.
Yeah.
And if Parcells went to Ray Lucas a little bit sooner and kept him, you know, at the end of the year, you guys came up a game short, but nobody would have wanted to play the Jets if they got into the playoffs that year.
At that point of the season, yeah, we were humming. We're doing pretty good.
What do you think about your former coach, Herm Edwards, getting back on the sidelines?
Wow.
Did you see that one? Did you not know that? Breaking news. He's back in college. He's coaching Arizona State.
I did not think he would leave television to go back to college, but hey, that's good. I'll be sure to leave a voicemail on me. I mean, he's great to play for. The guy can convince you to run through a brick wall. I tell you that much. And I mean, he loves his guys. I love one of his slogans where he says, I treat everybody fair, but not the same. He said, I'm not going to let you do what I allow Curtis Martin to do. You can't do what Vinny Testaverde do. So those guys got an awesome coach. He's going to lead them down a great path, and I think he's a great guy to play for.
All right, both of you guys need to be honest with me and be honest with everybody out here. 2001, when Tom Brady steps out on that field after Mo Lewis knocks out Drew Bledsoe, did you ever think in your wildest dreams the guy running on the field would win 5 Super Bowls and maybe go down as the greatest quarterback of all time? Did you ever think that was coming?
I don't think anybody knew that.
Honestly,
I don't think they knew it.
No. Honestly, I can say I honestly trained with Tom in Kenner, Louisiana, when I got kicked out of Florida State, and I knew there was something special about him back then.
Really?
We was working out together. He just had it. We drove to Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl because either one of us got invited. And during that time, I trained with him for those months. I knew something. It was good. I mean, he didn't look the part, but it was just something about him. I mean, he placed ball, catchable ball. Very intelligent guy, just something about
it. But you know what the funny thing about it is? They go on that streak and they win the Super Bowl in 2001, right? Next year, 2002, you guys win the division. Pats don't even make the playoffs, and you guys have that great game in New England on that Sunday night, second to last week of the season. I think you had a touchdown. I know you had a touchdown. You guys rolled all over them and knocked them out of the playoffs. You're thinking, all right, it was just a one-year fluke. It's not happening again. But yet they bounce back the next year, and the rest is history. How difficult was that, though, knowing that, all right, each and every year we're coming back, and, of course, your first objective to win the AFC East, but you got to deal with them?
You had to deal with him and Peyton Manning back then.
And Peyton Manning, you're right.
So, I mean, it was tough time to be around because those guys were there every year, but no, the guy's great. He's one of the best that ever played.
We had our Chad Pennington, though. Still love the guy.
Isn't it unfortunate, though, with Chad, because he just couldn't shake the injury bug? You always say what if about Chad. You know, there's a lot of anticipation. We're all excited about Sam Darnold is, you know, hopefully being that next guy for the Jets. But, boy, Chad, if he could just only stay on the field, and it would just always seem to be bad luck one thing after another with that shoulder. But, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, right? What could have been?
But I think the thing with the guys is, I mean, you can't fight the injury bug. It is what it is. But the relationship that you made while we were playing is the most important thing. I know a lot of guys get flack for not being on the field and playing and stuff like that. But the relationships I made with these guys in the locker room, off the field, was the most important thing. Of course, the wins and the losses count. But the relationships we created over the long term is the most important thing I could have ever got out of this game.
How much do you stay involved, at least in terms of being a fan, watching the game now? Do you keep up with the NFL, you guys?
Every weekend for me.
Yeah, I've been a massive sports fan my whole life. So, I keep track of the guys that, you know, been watching since college, and just nice to see how they evolve into the pro level.
And both of you guys, I mean, Todd Bowles was an assistant with the Jets when you were on the team in 2000,
yeah.
Right? He was the D-back coach or whatever. What do you remember from Todd Bowles as the assistant way back then to what you see now that he's a head coach running the team?
He was a lot thinner.
Shots fired by LC.
That was Lavernius Coles?
That was him.
87?
No, but I mean, did you think back then that this was a guy who had the makings of being a future head coach?
I never had a lot of interaction with him during that time.
We talked a little bit. I thought he was a great guy, great football mind, but it's just a matter of him getting a chance, and he's made the most of it.
You know, when you see a guy, you guys both played with Curtis Martin. He went into the Hall of Fame. Kevin Mawai's a guy who's been a finalist, and he should get in by all accounts. Let's be honest. He'll be in here in a couple of years. But, you know, when you see a couple of guys that you played so closely with over the years, week in and week out, when they get honored like that, do you almost take a look at that and say, you know what, I played a hand in that. I had a part in that. And you almost feel like it's an achievement for the group as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, we're part of it, but now it's like blood, sweat, and tears with each other. So when I got in the Ring of Honor that night, I said, you know, I'm represent all the guys that I ever played with, from some number one on the team to number 53, you know, whatever they were on the depth chart. I just felt that way, and I think he does too.
I asked Lavernius this question before you got here. When you look at the state of the wide receiver position when you played as to how it is now, when it seems like these guys have so much free reign, just, you know, you can't put your hands on them or whatever, do you look at it now and say, boy, that would have been a lot easier nowadays?
Yeah, that would be. That would have been. I was talking about that with my wife on the way up there. They can't even get hit anymore.
You can't even breathe on them.
No, you can't breathe. You can't hit them when they're not looking. I mean, the game's completely different now. But they're trying to do their best to make it safer, but I don't know if they could ever truly make it safe.
Well, this thing with the helmet rule is going to be very interesting, year. And
it's silly.
You already had some rough moments there on Thursday night in that preseason game. You know, guys, the refs are just throwing the flag because they're kind of doing it out of fear. But that'll be interesting as we move through the season here, how that rule is applied. But these two guys laid it on the line each and every week. They were great Jets. Lavernius Coles, Wayne Corbett joining us here at the Green and White Scrimmage. Guys, great seeing you, and we hope to see a lot more of you, all right?
Nice.
LC, Wayne, thanks for stopping by, buddy. Guys, big round of applause. Lavernius Coles, Wayne Corbett.
This is the Dan Grosser Show on 98.7 ESPN.